Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety, the podcast from Lighthouse Hockey. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me on this rainy evening via Skype is my friend Mike Leboff. And Mike, we actually have an Islanders regulation loss to talk about. It's weird.
Yeah, it feels like it's been years, actually. I didn't even look back to see when the last one was, but it didn't really feel like a loss. I wasn't terribly upset. I said, you know what, one of these were going to come. I thought the Islanders weren't great, but they hung with a team that was that's a cup contender, or at least a contender in the East, and so it's not nothing too terrible to take from it. And I actually was proud of the way that Islander fans didn't freak out after the game.
I was surprised too, but it was their first regulation loss since December 20th, and it was February 5th when the game happened. Which was remarkable to me. Like, I totally didn't even realize that was the case. And you're like, wow, I guess that explains how they went from being sort of on the playoff bubble to being in first place in the Metro for about a month now at this point. So, yeah, all right. It's still pretty crazy. There's a couple of ways to take it. So they've played three games since the break was over. The most recent being the one we're talking about, the 3-1 loss to the Boston Bruins last night in Boston. We're going to talk about that. Before that, the day after we last spoke with our friend Arthur Staple, they had a game against the Tampa Bay Lightning. It was their first game after an 11-day break. The Islanders lost 1-0 to the Lightning, but that game was a lot like what you're talking about. I think a lot of people had that same feeling after that game, which was they had a 10-day break. They went toe-to-toe with the best team in the Eastern Conference. Both teams were like almost dead even through three periods and overtime. Everybody had their chances, the ebbs and flow, all kind of working. Both goalies were amazing. The shots on goal ended up being 41-36 in favor of Tampa, so it was very close. And Victor Hedman was the only guy to score in the shootout. And I mean, you couldn't get closer than that game for two teams that were leading their divisions at the time. And, you know, I think most people, again, like, looked at that loss as like that was as positive and constructive and encouraging a loss as you can possibly get against one of the best teams in the league and easily the best team in the conference.
Yeah, it was something. That game was,
it really was.
We've seen a lot of those games where it's like just back and forth, but they usually end up, you know, 6-4 or 7-3 or whatever it is. The goaltenders were so good. I didn't think I somewhere in the middle of that second period, I said that I didn't think the Islanders were going to score on Vasilevskiy. So it was going to be up to whether or not Greiss broke. I just, as a feeling, he just was dialed in. And
both of them,
I mean, Greiss was unbelievable too.
Yeah, they both made their, I would say, about a half a dozen just insane saves. Like, they were just crazy. You know, arms flying, limbs flying. I think at one point Greiss made like two or three saves in a row in one sequence that were like, how did he do that? But that was, yeah, that was that game. You know, this phrase kind of gets thrown around a lot, but that was a playoff game. Like, that had a playoff feel. It was, you know, the end of January or early, I guess, February 1st. And it felt like a playoff game. It was as tight, but it back and forth, lots of scoring chances either way as you could get in a game like that. And, you know, I think the Lightning were ready. We didn't think the Islanders would win 5-1 like they did the last time they played the Lightning. But the Islanders are ready too, and it was pretty cool.
I thought it was probably the most entertaining loss the Islanders will have this season. Mm. And I also, John Cooper said some nice things about the Islanders before the game, and we're big fans of him. Yeah. And we're also, you know, the Lightning are, and along with the Canadians and Bruins, are kind of our allies. So, you know, good for them. But the most jarring part of that game, and I mean jarring in a good way, was I was kind of just like taking it all in, and like it was still kind of hitting me how that game was going. And I was alone making dinner or something, and I had NHL Tonight on because I wanted to watch the highlights again. And I wanted to see how the supposed neutrals would kind of talk about the Islanders' effort in that game. I can't remember the name of the lady who was hosting the show that night, but she led into the highlight clips right before the break. She goes, and, you know, when we come back, we'll see how a tight affair between the two best teams in the Eastern Conference went. And for some reason, it just did it. I was like, oh, like who did the Lightning play tonight? And then I was like, oh, wait, it's the Islanders. Yeah. Like, she just called the Islanders one of the two best teams in the Eastern Conference, and she's right. Hmm. And that's crazy
funny.
To me. I don't think I've ever like had a moment like that where someone said like that, and I was like, right. Whoa.
That's pretty funny. But, yeah. That's the exact opposite of the headline the New York Post had the next day, which was, Islanders can't muster single goal against Lightning. Like that to me. somebody pointed that. Yeah, tell me about it, Jimmy. That's ridiculous. You know, somebody. Yeah, I know. Somebody pointed that out in the comments, and I was like, wait, what? And I had to go look, and I was like, come on, seriously? And then the story, I think, was an AP story that was, you know, basically what we were talking about. Like, it was a tight game between two teams going toe to toe, and, you know, somebody had to lose, and basically that's how it worked. But man, whoever wrote that headline is clearly a Rangers fan, or maybe it was Larry Brooks. I don't know. But that was pretty wild. So the next night, though, the Islanders played the LA Kings, not the Tampa Bay Lightning. And we knew it was going to be a pretty different game. And it was. It was not pretty at all. It was very sloppy. The Kings, I did not realize this. So the Islanders played a back-to-back. The Kings have been off for 11 days. So they were off a day longer than the Islanders were. They apparently had the longest break in the league. And you know, I mean, the players aren't going to use it as an excuse, but man, that's got to be weird. I mean, it's one thing playing on a back-to-back against a team that maybe didn't play the night before, maybe had 2 days off, but to play a back-to-back against a team that it's been off for almost 2 weeks, that's a very weird feeling. And at one point in the third period, the Kings took a 2-1 lead, and, you know, it was kind of like, oh man, really? This is going to, you know, this is going to suck. But I guess after last night, it's kind of a letdown as to be expected. But, man, the Islanders came storming right back. From that point on, it was all Islanders. Matt Barzal tied it about less than a minute later. And then Michael Dal Colle, who we're going to talk a lot about in a little bit, scored the game winner on a deflection. Ryan Pulock had 3 assists. They added an empty netter. And boom, just like that, a 2-1 Kings lead turns into a 4-2 Islanders win. And, you know, it's taking care of business, like we talked about, just getting in there. It was almost, I don't want to say it was the exact opposite of the game against the Lightning, but it was pretty close. It was not nearly as exciting as the game that happened before. It has to be expected between, you know, two teams that have nothing to do with each other and one team that, quite frankly, isn't very good. In this case, that team being the LA Kings. So, not the Islanders, which is weird.
Yeah, so I was at that game, and like you said about the letdown spot for the team, I thought the crowd would kind of be the same. I thought since that crowd was so into it and loud for the Lightning game, and that game kind of lended itself to that, I was a little worried that the crowd wouldn't be as enthralled with this game, especially, you know, against a Western Conference team that's not very good and plays a lumbering style. And I was really pleased with just being, the atmosphere was awesome. Again, I was with four of my friends, a couple of whom it was their first game back at the Coliseum. One of whom, my buddy Kenny, he just finished a bike trip across Europe. He just biked across Europe with
the Zdeno Chara.
Yes, exactly. He brought his Islander skateboard with him everywhere. So he has some pretty cool pictures up of like his skateboard at like the Eiffel Tower and stuff like that. But the crowd was great. Robin Leonard's like kind of was the main thing that kept everyone engaged in the game. His play was he was obviously really good that game. And then when the Kings scored that goal, I think there was like 6:30 left in that third period. My friend Chris just turned to me, tongue-in-cheekly said, "It's going to be okay. It's the Islanders." Mm. And he was right. I mean, those last 6 minutes were just awesome.
Yeah.
They were the crowd was awesome. It was so much fun being there. Barzal's goal, like, basically was a huge sigh of relief. And then Dal Colle, when he scored, it was party on.
Yeah,
it was awesome.
It was pretty cool. The story afterwards was about how they kind of didn't play all that well. Arthur Staple at one point called it, they played about 14 to 16 good minutes of hockey, but it was enough to win the game. And it's hard to argue. He's exactly right. But the story after the game was that the Barzal, Beauvillier, Bailey line had been set for quite a bit of that third period because they weren't generating anything. And they were, in fact, actively kind of hurting the team. They were given, you know, pucks were getting given away. They were spending way too much time in their own zone. They weren't getting anything done. And this is your ostensible, you know, whether you think they're the top line or the Nelson line is the top line, you know, they're one of the two main offensive contributors to the team, and they weren't getting anything done. So after this lengthy benching, you know, here comes Matt Barzell, and he just rockets on the ice and just scores the game-tying goal. And then after that, you know, again, things were good. So it seemed like they were kind of on track, and it seemed like this was the wake-up call they were going to need. But 2 days later, they played in Boston, and they ended up losing, like I said, 3-1. The Barzell line, again, just could not get anything going. Way too much time in their own zone. Josh Bailey had a bunch of big turnovers, and Beauvillier was just kind of invisible. I mean, I hate using that term, but he really was. He didn't really do much. And he had like one shot on goal, I think, at one point, but that was about it. They were tied with the Bruins through two periods, and it looked like the Islanders may have taken a lead in the third, but Devon Taves was literally 2 inches, maybe, offsides before Cal Clutterbuck entered the zone with the puck. Clutterbuck had scored. That goal came back. Islanders were never quite right after that. A goal kind of bounced in off of Robin Leonard's arm or something, which is kind of a weird miscue. Again, he was great. I'm not trying to blame him, but it was kind of a weird goal. Kind of bounced off of him and in. He wasn't happy about it. The Islanders did have a 4-minute power play, which maybe should have been a 5-on-3 for 2 minutes, but in any event, they got a 4-minute power play. They didn't score. Surprise, surprise. That's another problem we're going to talk about. And just like that, boom, it was a 3-1 loss, and an 8-game point streak has been snapped. You know, I can see where you're coming from, whereas it wasn't a terrible loss. I mean, the Bruins are really good, and actually I was thinking to myself while I was watching it that if you wanted to kind of project the sort of ideal for this Islanders team, particularly under Barry Trotz, I think the Bruins are the sort of like, you know, version of the Megazord version of what the Islanders are trying to accomplish. They are incredibly good defensively. They whatever offensive opportunities they get, they bury. And they don't get too many, but they don't need too many because they're just so tight defensively. And then obviously any kind of tiny breakdown is gobbled up by Tuukka Rask. And they don't play the most exciting brand of hockey in the world, but it is incredibly effective, and it is incredibly frustrating to watch when you're rooting for the other team. Obviously the big difference between the Islanders and Bruins is that the Bruins have a couple of Hall of Famers on their team in Bergeron and Chara, a couple of near Hall of Famers probably in Rask and Marchand, guys in the conversation. Pasternak is obviously really good. Krejci is really good. We all know the list. And the Islanders have a bunch of guys who are pretty good, but maybe not so good. And obviously Bruce Cassidy's been at the helm there for 2 years. So I can think about it. You're like, man, that the winning streak couldn't have gone on forever. And boy, the Bruins are really good. And, you know, that's the team that I think the Islanders aspire to be, which would be great because, you know, they've got a couple of Stanley Cup finals trips in them and one win. But I'm interested to hear more about, like, you know, you kind of found sort of the positives in it, whereas I think most people kind of found the negatives. But like you said, I think the rage was muted a little bit, at least.
Yeah, I think the Bruins are kind of like the worst matchup for the Islanders, and if you're looking at potential playoff series too, just because they like you just said, like the Islanders are just a lesser version of them, so to speak.
Yeah.
So
that would be a bad matchup.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so I was looking at it kind of through that lens. Like this is a team that does what the Islanders do just better than them, and more consistently better, I guess is the best way to put it. But that's why, you know, I was looking big picture wise, like this is probably after they got a point against the Lightning, I kind of had a feeling this would probably be the end of the road for the point streak. Like you said, they had chances to win it. Tuukka Rask made a couple of big saves. I can't remember who it was that hit the post, maybe Boychuk. And then obviously the overturned goal on the offsides, which is, whatever. That's just hope those, you know, even out throughout the season. And I think it's the thing that sucks about it was that might have been the best, most impressive play of the game from Devon Taves. Like that was, yeah, that rush was, you saw him, he was shot out of a cannon from a dead stop. It was right off a faceoff, and the guy just was like made something out of nothing 170 feet away from the other goal. So that was I think there were just enough positives to take away from that game that made me feel all right, like, you know, this is a good team, probably the worst matchup for the Islanders, at least in my mind. Just nothing to really panic about. And hopefully, you know, they got the Devils tomorrow. So hopefully just, you know, they're able to take care of business against a team that is not the Bruins and not as nearly as good as them.
Yeah, that's putting it mildly. That's being very, very complimentary to the Devils. I mean, there were definitely positives in that game. I thought the Islanders' defense in particular was really good in that game. Pelech and Pulock in particular looked really good. Yeah, they were really sharp.
Those two and Ryan Pulock especially are probably having their best like mini stretch of the season right now.
Yeah, Taves, like you said, Taves and Mayfield were very active, and Taves had some of the best offensive looks for any Islander were for Devon Taves. He's got that speed, and he was making it work. And Letty and Boychuk were good too, doing their kind of grinding thing. I thought defensively they were really good, but you know, all it takes is one breakdown, and that's it. One guy gets free in front of the net, and boom, the game is over. So I did have this kind of like vision of the future, whereas in like the Islanders and Bruins are like these two kind of defensive beasts that are going up against each other, and it'll take a little while and obviously a bunch of better players for the Islanders to get there. I think again that to me is the team that, you know, people want to if you want to compare the Islanders to one team, you know, I remember when people used to compare the Islanders to the Oilers because they were kind of like these sort of, you know, consecutive or whatever parallel rebuilds going on, and people used to complain that the Oilers, they got defense, they're good, they got a goalie, it's Cam Talbot, where are the Islanders at? Well, I mean, the Oilers right now are a complete mess. They gave up 5 goals to Chicago the other night and in the third period, and are, you know, now just questioning everything. So, you know, it's funny how you come, but to me the Bruins are the team to compare them to. The loss did sting, but at the end of the day, the Islanders were still in first place by 2 points over the Caps. The Penguins had gotten shut out by the Hurricanes that night, who are the Hurricanes and the Flyers right now are basically the hottest teams in the NHL.
Yeah.
Like these two teams literally can't lose, and it's incredibly irritating because they're pushing for playoff positions now, and the Islanders are well ahead of both of them, but you know, you lose a couple of games in a row, and all of a sudden, you're not as well ahead of them. So, yeah, right now the Islanders 66 points, Caps 64, Penguins 62 at the top of the Metro. Columbus hanging on at the bottom in the 8th spot with 61 points. But the Sabres, Hurricanes both have 58, and the Flyers have 54. So the Blue Jackets are kind of, you know, stretching the collar out a little bit, sweating things out. You know, would have been preferable had the Islanders won against the Bruins. But like you said, they have the Devils on Thursday night, the day you're probably listening to this. They also have matinee games against the Avalanche and Wild on the weekend, and then a game in Buffalo on Tuesday. Those are 4 very winnable games. I don't want to try and jinx things, but they are 4 very winnable games. And I would suspect, I want to be like your friend. I want to be very, very positive. It's the Islanders. Of course they'll win, you know. I want to think that anything can happen. It's hockey, but still, I mean, out of those 4 games, I mean, is it crazy to expect anything less than 8 points? I mean, if they get 7, is that a disaster? No, but.
Yeah, I think you say, it's funny because there's such a fine line between 6 and 8, but I think you say you better get 6. Because, you know, we talk about these 3 games that have happened. The Islanders, they played so well against the Lightning. They grinded out a victory against the Kings. And then they lose against the Bruins. So that's 3 points from 3 games, which, you know, sounds a lot worse than, like if you look at it, like, oh, they played probably, of the, 180 minutes, they probably played, like, 70, maybe 60 minutes of good hockey. Or, like, great hockey, I guess, maybe. And they got 3 points. So you're just like, that's probably not good enough. You know, that they need to take 4 out of every 6 available points. So hopefully, I mean, I think 6 points, and especially from that slate of games, is basically a requirement. I mean, you're the first place team in the division. Like that's what first place teams do. Yeah. So
I would think so. But you know, and that's the other thing too. So the Islanders are in first place. And they have been for quite a while. And as such, they are climbing up the Stanley Cup odds, which is pretty crazy. They are now 14-1 shot to win the Stanley Cup, which is pretty amazing considering I'm pretty sure they started the season at 100-1, maybe 250-1, something like that. But they're really up there now. And you know, it's funny how the sort of like betting society or the betting community has kind of come around to this team very slowly. It's not just them, obviously, it's other people as well. But you were saying you were talking to somebody who was kind of giving you a little bit of insight as to like how this sort of happens and how the team, it's finally taken this long. I mean, it's February 6th now. Season's got 30 games left. It's finally taken this long for people to really notice the Islanders as a betting option, you know, because they aren't what they were projected to be when the season started, really.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I spoke with Andy McNeil, who lives in Canada. He's a professional bettor up there. I think he's in Edmonton. And his Twitter is BetAndyBet. And he, first of all, he's even if you don't gamble on hockey, or he's just a great follow. He's extremely insightful about the game and does a lot of good radio hits too to listen to. And he's very, very good at what he does. Obviously, you can't. It's really hard to make a living as a professional gambler. Like, it's almost impossible. And he's been able to do it. So his numbers are obviously very good. And you know, I talked to him a lot. I've learned a lot from him. Just you know, at first from afar, and then the two of us kind of start talking and just like swapping notes, whatever. And you know, I'll randomly like you know get his goat with some Islander stuff, especially early in the year, because it was taking not just his you know, betting model and his betting predictions to catch up to the Islanders, but basically across the market. Like the Islanders, I think until yesterday, right before the Bruins game, were the most profit. If you had bet the Islanders every game, they were the most profitable team in the NHL. So it just that doesn't show you anything other than that markets and the algorithms from odds makers just hadn't caught up to just how good the Islanders were. And I asked him, I was just like, you know, what do you think it was? And his answer was pretty good. And I think it's stuff that we all maybe thought, and he put it together into just one thought. Obviously, the Robin Leonard situation is one thing. Like, it's really hard to account for someone who was struggling for a couple of years to then go through something, you know, who was then going through personal struggles and just how much of an effect that had on him. So then the other thing, obviously, is Trotz, right? It's very, very hard. And I would say in any sport outside of football, I think it's kind of hard to gauge just, and hockey probably the most, how much an effect elite coaching has on a team. And that's what Barry Trotz is. He's probably the best coach in the NHL. If he's not the best, he's one of the top three. And then the other one is that the Islanders were so, people were so, and models were so down on the Islanders going into the season. This is a team that, like we've talked about, ad nauseum, worst defensive team, you know, basically in the modern NHL last year. So that was a large sample size. And then they had the year before that where the Islanders still weren't very good and they were pretty poor defensively. And so you go into this year, everyone was down on them. So the first 20 games, the Islanders had a good start, and it just took a little while for, you know, you want a decent data set, obviously, to go and start to project a team for the rest of the year. And 20 games is kind of the accepted mark. And the Islanders' first 20 games, although they were getting wins, the Trotz effect hadn't really started yet. So their underlying numbers were still struggling. So even though that the Islanders were going to get better, nobody could predict it because they thought the wheels were going to fall off. So then when the Trotz system kind of really started to bear fruit in that middle like 21 to 40 game stretch, models were still down on them. The Islanders were still being basically undervalued in the market. And so then I would say between the 25th and 45th game of the season is when people started to have their come to Jesus moment with the Islanders this season of like, oh, wow, like this team is actually getting better every game. I think you saw it a lot on Islanders Twitter. I think Carrie Haber did a really good job, like kind of saying, like, look at these small incremental improvements the Islanders have been making over the past week. And this was like, you know, in November or whatever. And I just think that these models just and the market just took so much longer to catch up. And finally, when it did, Not saying it was too late for them, but like it was like, oh man, like look where the Islanders are. They're at the top of their division already. So I just think there's just like all these like extenuating factors that finally came into one and kind of just as he put it, he's like, they've been a thorn in the side for basically everybody who makes hockey predictions.
And I love to hear that. That's great.
Yeah. And it's funny because you'll see these guys on Twitter, like him and Manny and guys like Dom at The Athletic. They pretended to hate your team, whatever. Mm-hmm. They do that shtick. But for the Islanders, they were driving these people mad because they were getting results and losing them money and losing the books money because they just couldn't figure them out. And I think now, I think 14-1 is a little short. Like, I wouldn't ever suggest betting the Islanders at 14-1 to win the Stanley Cup when you could have had them for a much bigger number. But I think it's obviously, I don't know, like that is a, pretty short number for them. But I would say, like, you know, that is a much more accurate description than they were, 2 weeks ago when they were 40-1 mm-hmm. or I think I like 6 or 7 weeks ago, they were still in the 80-100-1 range while they were still getting results. So that's kind of like what we've noticed about this. This team is just as legitimately turned everybody's head from the, Jeremy Roenicks or whatever, like those kind of analysts to the guys who literally do this for a living, making money off hockey results. So
maybe I can interest you in a bet. They're 2-1 to win the Metro right now, and 7-1 to win the East. So you probably could have made more money had you put a bet on them back in like December or something. But that's all. It's interesting because I think it's funny because so Carey is a good person to bring up because you're right. He's the guy who for months has been like, every week or even every day, I think he does, maybe sometimes multiple times a day. Like, he shows you a little bit here. This thing is trending this way. It's trending that way. And suddenly, those first kind of wonky 20 games or so are a thing of the past. And like, you see new trends forming. And, look, nobody's saying the Islanders are like, world beating juggernaut or anything. Like, that's not what it's about. It's about getting incrementally better and seeing a team coalescing around its coach. And, when you don't have like a prediction or a model or something, that's a lot easier. I mean, Carey just puts the numbers in his thing and he spits it out. And I mean, his audience is mainly Islanders fans that are interested to see like, what is the team doing well? And his charts show that, they're giving up less chances. They're having more high danger chances. Like, it's all very interesting stuff. But guys like professional bettors or like, these stats guys with stats websites and or like Dom, like you mentioned at The Athletic, I was reading a thing today. It's funny you brought this up today because I read his thing at The Athletic today about how his model had put so much emphasis on the Islanders' like preseason prediction that it took it a long time to give them credit. And he had been kind of predicting this massive collapse for a long time. And it took a while for the model to kind of take all the data from this year and start to take it seriously. And suddenly, what he's saying is he still expects there to be a regression, but at the same time, it's hard to say that they're bad. Like they're clearly on a playoff pace, basically. And so to just throw all that out because, they weren't expected to be good back in September is dumb. Like now we have 50, 60, whatever games of data that show that this team can actually do something and they're good. Whether you credit the goalies, which obviously he mentions as a big factor. Leonard in particular has been excellent. Or just, Trotz cutting down the amount of shots and having them play a system, which we've talked about last week as being the night and day difference between last year and this year. I mean, if you watched a video, pick any game from last year versus any game from this year, you would see it's almost like two completely different franchises. Like, one runs around like a chicken without a group of chickens without a head, and the other one knows where they need to be, especially in the defensive end, which is something the Islanders have never had in a long time. But yeah, I mean, it takes a while for these things to come around. And when they do, they're like, oh, maybe there's a reason that these guys have a share of first place. And it's been pretty cool. It's a funny thing. I meant to bring this up with Arthur Staple last week, but I totally forgot. When it comes to Trotz, and I want to get to him in a second because we're going to got some lineup changes to talk about. I wonder if, we talk about all those first 20 games, they were kind of finding their way and their underlying metrics were terrible, obviously, and they were just kind of figuring things out. I had seen Caps fans be like, it took the Capitals a long time, like seasons. I mean, Barry was there for 4 years and it took really, they won this President's Trophy the second year, but it took a long time for them to really to adopt the system and to really buy into the things he was saying. And when they did, nobody really pegged them to be a Stanley Cup champion last year because their numbers were a little bit down, but look at the end result. They won. I wonder if this Islanders team, because they've had so little success, and because these players, a lot of them who have only ever played for the Islanders, were so receptive to Barry coming in and wanting to hear what he said and wanting to do what he said, that 20 games now seems like a very small amount of time. You know what I'm saying? Like, it took them, it took them 20 games to figure it out. Well, it took the Caps like a season and a half to figure it out. So,
yeah,
you know,
that's a good
point.
But
like, you know, if you're telling Alex Ovechkin how to play, maybe he's going to be a little bit less receptive because he had X number of MVP trophies. Whereas if you're telling Anders Lee how to play, he's going to be like, you know what? You're right, because the way we were doing it before wasn't working, and now this is going to work. I don't know. Just a theory I have.
Yeah, no, I think that probably has some legs to it. I think the Capitals, too, just were a team that, especially under Trotz, also drove people, models tended to underrate their chances as well, just because the Trotz way of playing, just the numbers and stats that these models weigh and think make, and the stats that make them think this team is good and a contender, Trotz teams just don't really put those numbers up. Like, they don't compile those numbers. And I think maybe, like, you think about the season, I guess it was a season, the season the Islanders played the Capitals in the playoffs was his second year with the Capitals, I believe.
Was it? Was 2015? Now I gotta look.
I think it was 4 years, but yeah. So I want to say it was his second. It might have, but those like two middle years, I think, and this obviously sounds like hindsight is 2020 just because they won the cup. But those middle 2 years, and then you look at the team that ended up winning the cup. There was just something a little different about them in the playoffs, especially, I noticed too. Like,
it was his first year actually with the Caps.
That was his first year. Okay. Yeah. So like when they would eventually lose to the Penguins in the playoffs, like you could anecdotally see like, they're just missing it. Mm. Like and it's quote unquote, I hate using this term, but buy in, like they just didn't buy in yet. And I think like that year when the Blue Jackets went up 2-0 last year on them in the series, and the first round, like all of a sudden, they were just like, you know what? Let's just throw everything we can into this basket, play the way we're supposed to, and they turned into a really good defensive team. Like this is the Washington Capitals, and they're playing, you know, a defensive brand of hockey. And so people, like you, if you were brought a casual fan and you're like, this is the Capitals, they're like, oh, like they got Ovechkin, like they probably are dynamos offensively, like, and then you get like, no, like this is not. That's not just not who they are. Like their identity is that somehow he turned a team with maybe the best pure goal scorer of his generation into a defense first hockey. He didn't build the team around Ovechkin. He said, all right, you're going to play this way. And it paid off. And so like, I think your theory definitely has some legs to it. Because like, can you imagine going into that room and being like, all right, Alex and crew, like here's how we're going to play now. And it starts from our red line.
And I, you know, it's funny thinking back to that time. I think, you know, helping them defensively was really basically what he's done with the Islanders in a lot of ways. You know, obviously there's some strategy to it, but I think a lot of it's just in the details. Like, you know, don't let your guy get away with the puck, you know, be the first guy to the puck. It's that little stuff. It's those little details that the Islanders never paid attention to, and now they do. And it's when they follow those details, they win and they smother teams. And we've seen it in the games that, you know, they won in Toronto, the games they won in Tampa, the game they won in Washington, where they went down there and they only won 2-0, but man, they just stifled the Caps because they were on every single puck and they were always on top of things. So, you know,
just another thing Carey has been talking about a lot is that the Islanders' best defensive trio, their best forward line, that defensive forward line, it has been the Cizikas line, the quote unquote, you know, CCM best fourth line, the identity line, whatever you want to call these guys, and it's because those three players, basically, maybe not Cizikas, but more Clutterbuck and Martin, if those guys don't pay attention to the details, they don't have a job. Like they're not able to play NHL hockey if they're not literally ticking every box on what they are supposed to do. And so having those type of guys who know, like, I have to check off every part of this list, do everything the coach says, and to put myself in a chance to just even have a job, that you're seeing that, like, that is coming to, you're seeing these guys literally stifle and get the last minute of a game. Mm. Can you imagine, like 2 years ago, we'd see it on Twitter all the time, where Capuano would put this line out with like a minute left, the Islanders were up 2-1, the other team pulled their goalie, and he goes with the best fourth line in hockey. People would freak out, but now it's like, all right, you trust them because they are doing their job, and the job that Trotz has like kind of put it forth, and they're doing it very well, because if they don't, like, they're just not good enough.
Matt Martin in particular, and Carey has also been the one on top of this. We should probably get him on the show one of these days. but he's been on top of these. You know, Matt Martin's has turned himself into a pretty decent defensive player. He's good at stifling shots. He's good at, you know, again, doing those little things, dislodging the puck from people. He hits, obviously, a lot. And, you know, he's never going to be a big goal scorer. And although he's already got more goals this year than I think he's had the last 2 years combined. But, you know, the difference being, like you said, I mean, you know, we've seen that line out where in the final minute of the game a lot. But the difference in how they played then versus now is completely, you know, it's night and day. Like, you can tell that there's a plan now, and they know what to do, and they know how to get it out there. Whereas before it was like, don't screw up, don't screw up, don't screw up, don't screw up, you know. And sometimes they screwed up, but sometimes they also didn't. So, you know, when they didn't, it was like, oh, that's a genius move. And when they did, it's like, well, obviously this is the dumbest thing we've ever seen. So there's a big difference between then and now, between the Capuano wait era and Barry Trotz. But speaking of lineup, the lineup and some changes coming on. So as we alluded to earlier at the top of the show, the Barzal, Beauvillier, Bailey line just isn't working lately. And word came from practice today in Newark that Barry Trotz was making some changes, one of which was taking Anthony Beauvillier down to the third line, or I should say the Filppula-Komarov line, and elevating Michael Dal-Col to Barzal line duties. And, you know, we haven't talked about Dal-Col that much since he's been brought up, other than just to say he's been good. He's been defensively responsible. He's out there. He hits. He, you know, again, he's got a lot of energy, and he plays really well with Komarov and Filppula, two guys that are, like, literally each twice his age. And to see him get elevated to the first line is both a cool reward, but also, like, yeah, that kind of makes sense. Beauvillier has gone, I think it's like 8 or 9 games without a goal. He was not very active in the game against the Bruins. And, you know, maybe Dal-Col is the kind of guy to bring that sort of like energy, the board play, the corner play, and just that, you know, puck hound kind of way thing to get Barzal the puck to open up space. Even Dal-Col himself said it, open up some space for him and hopefully Bailey to get some stuff done. I know people wanted to see Bailey move down the line, but hey, you can only move one guy down there. Maybe Bailey will be next. But I think it's a pretty cool change, and I liked Trotz's quote. Talk about differences between Capuano / Wait and Barry Trotz. Here's what Trotz said. This was in Newsday today regarding the line changes. Andrew Gross asked him, and what he said was, quote, "You give someone else an opportunity. It also puts a little bit of a red flag in for the groups. Make sure you perform or you can be replaced." Like, that's pretty wild to think that. Like, you have to perform. There are expectations now, or you can be replaced. And, you know, first you get busted down a couple lines. Beauvillier can't hack it there, and he's still in the slump, and he still isn't showing much. Well, who knows what the next stop is? Breast box, Bridgeport, some other team, who knows? And that to me was like another night and day aspect of it. Like, wow, perform or you can be replaced. Damn, that's cold. But that's what coaches do. Like, that's what a good coach would do. And, you know, hopefully message sent. Barry said, yeah, maybe they won't make the changes. Maybe we will. We'll see. But certainly sounds like he's ready to make the change, or at least put a scare into somebody so that he doesn't have to. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's also refreshing to see something. A lot of people, I think yesterday was maybe the breaking point with the Beauvillier, Barzal, Bailey line, because like it was three, they were all right against the Lightning. So two bad games in a row, which still isn't really acceptable for the top line of a first place team. So I think people were saying, you know, maybe it's a good idea to flip these two guys. And it seemed like an obvious thing to do. Like it was, it wasn't, you know, reinventing the wheel. They're two fits. One guy's kind of riding hot, the other guy is not, and if you just flip them, you know, that probably will make sense. And they did it, which is a welcome change to the New York Islander organization. Here's a pretty easy fix to make it. And I'm excited. I think also, like, the underrated part of this is that Beauvillier had a really good stretch of games with Filppula and Komarov. They're almost like the form psychiatrist, like, for these guys. Like, if you haven't found, like, any good form in the past couple of games, like, go play with these two guys. They play a simple game. Like, they'll make things easy for you because they will take care of the other side of the game, the defensive side. They'll make sure that, you know, everything's accounted for on the ice while you figure yourself out, while you go find yourself on the ice. And so I think it's just like a smart, savvy move. I think a lot of people are starting to think maybe Beauvillier is the kind of the piece of this puzzle that might not fit. I think that's a bit of an overreaction. I think he's a very, very good player.
I actually think he could be pretty good down there with Komarov and Filppula. I don't think it's
he was really good with them. Yeah.
I don't think it's so much a demotion as it's just like, let's try this let's try this way and see what happens. But at the same time, like, if it doesn't work there and he isn't good there, then, you know, we have some really hard decisions to make. But
yeah, and I think the timing is very savvy too, right? You got two and a half weeks, three weeks to the deadline. And Beauvillier, to me, I was speaking with someone connected before who said that he doesn't think that the Islanders are going to really move any pieces of their current roster. And he, like, the Islanders are, the only way they would do it was for a big piece, like, let's just hypothetically, like, a Duchesne Stone level player. Like, that is the only way that someone moves. And it would, I was always thinking that, you know, once again, very hypothetically, it would be, you know, maybe Adam Pellick as a piece of it, because he's already a decent young defenseman under team control for a while.
And they're going to have Thomas Hickey come back at some point. So.
Right. And you wonder, like, I think that that teams from the outside, and this is me again, like, if I was the Ottawa Senators, I would say, the talks don't even start unless you say you're willing to trade this guy. He's under team control for a long time. So I just think it's like the timing is good both for the player and for the organization. Like, Beauvillier is a smart guy. He knows how this works. He knows, like, this could be he could miss out on something great if he doesn't get his game going. So it sets up for a kind of an interesting sub narrative to what has already been an awesome season, and kind of adds a little more intrigue just by doing this little move by flipping two guys.
Right. Well, I mean, for Beauvillier, he's got to play with his BFF, Barzal. Like, I'm sure he doesn't want to be moved off to a different team, you know, with his boy here. Obviously, he's not going anywhere. But I think the timing is right. I think they've got a slate here where they can, you know, okay, you drop a game against the Bruins. Hey, look, I mean, they're pretty good. They're a team with Stanley Cup aspirations. But, you know, now you have a stretch here where you can really make some hay and get those points back. And I think that, you know, that sense of urgency as well kind of plays into now is the time to make this change. Now is the time to see what else we got before we, you know, maybe make a change in a big way, seeing somebody move. So that brings us to some league news. The trade deadline is on the 25th, as we talked about last week with Arthur Staple. Moves have already been made. The Islanders, one target that the Islanders had in mind was Brian Boyle. Well, he's now a Nashville Predator. He got traded from the New Jersey Devils to Nashville today for a second-round pick. So the trade deadline season doesn't officially start until the Predators spend way too much on a guy they probably don't need. So that is that move right there. Brian Boyle's a nice player and all, but man, second round pick, that's pretty steep. Good on you, Ray Shiro, for getting that for Brian Boyle. He's good at pulling out those second round picks. He got them from Michael Grabner. He traded a second round pick for Michael Grabner. I take that back. What else? What was the other trade that happened today?
It was another Predators trade.
Oh, right, yeah. Cody McLeod of the Clan McLeod. He's back in Nashville for, I think, a fourth-round pick. And Rangers fans, if you heard a lot of laughing coming out of New York City today, it's probably a bunch of Rangers fans going, they got a fourth-round pick for Cody McLeod. I don't know why the Predators feel the need to stock up on these guys. I mean, at least Boyle can play. McLeod, no, dude, that you don't need a Cody McLeod. I mean, what is he going to do for you? If somebody gets hurt, you're going to play Cody McLeod? Seriously?
Yeah, it's weird.
It is weird.
That was strange. I thought the Boyle move, like you said, they overpaid. Mm-hmm. He's a good player. I kind of was just assuming the island. It was weird. I just assumed the Islanders were going to end up with Brian Boyle this whole time. It seems like the Islanders traded him almost a little bit. It was just like a good fit. And the way everybody was talking about it too, like people were doing like in depth. Here's how Brian Boyle will help the Islanders. Right. It wasn't meant to be. And then I started thinking, you know, he's a big body, and nobody ever called him Big Brian Boyle. Like, they're just those players that right. mostly like
big,
Canadians.
Big Ben Bishop.
Yes, exactly. Ben Bishop. I wonder, big Ben how do you Bishop. Become big? How do you get the big prefix? And they do it in soccer too. Like, you know, and I was thinking, like, I think Nick Bjugstad, who was traded earlier in the week. I'll hear people call him Big Nick Bjugstad. And,
John Scott also, Big John Scott.
Yes. That Bjugstad trade, that scared me a lot, because I'm just like, that he's the guy that the Penguins get at the deadline, who every year is going to be, he's going to score like 20 goals and win a Conn Smythe. So
I am 100% in agreement with you. He was actually a guy I was thinking that the Islanders can maybe get, you know, on the cheap, because he hadn't been really, and I know he hadn't done much this season. I looked at his numbers. He really hasn't done much. His underlying numbers were okay, but like scoring wise, it just was weird. But he's a monster. And I thought, geez, maybe that would be a good fit for the Islanders. Get him, plug him in that third line spot. But you know, my problem with sort of projecting Islanders trades is, I mean, you talk to somebody who said straight up, unless it's some kind of blockbuster deal, nobody's leaving nobody's going to leave that starting lineup. And I think that same way, like, I find it hard to believe that they would. I mean, we could all, let's be honest, like, they could probably use an upgrade on that third line, Filppula, Komarov, whatever. But like, I find it hard to believe that they would be like, hey, Phil, thanks for 60 great games. You're going to sit now because we're going to play this guy that we just traded. Like, that's just not going to happen. So get used to seeing those guys. Although I'm sure if they can upgrade somewhere, they probably will. But I thought Bjugstad would have been a cool pickup, but the Penguins got him, along with Jared McCann, who I feel like is another guy that the Penguins are going to just – you're going to hate this guy. I mean, we probably wouldn't have been able to pick him out of a police lineup a week ago, but now he's a Penguin, and he's like – you know, he's young, and he scores, and he hits, and he could be a huge bust, but he could also be like, oh, man, this is just like a new Steve Downey or Max Talbot type, like the guy who hits a lot of people but also scores goals, and you just hate him.
Yeah, I think the other part of that trade was obviously Derek Brassard going to the Panthers.
Oh, right, yeah.
And
who might be on the move again.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the Islanders, as we've been talking about here, Carey says, like, the thing is, the Islanders, if Casey Cizikas or Filppula, I don't even want to say anybody else, like, if those guys go down, it's a catastrophe for the Islanders. Right. Like, they just don't have the depth to bring it in. Like, you'll be looking at, you know, Steven Gionta coming back up to the Islanders, which is just not okay. So, like, a guy – that's why Boyle made sense, because he could play both center and wing. And that's why I thought, you know, Derek Brassard, who we basically have hated forever because he was with the Rangers and the Penguins the last, like, 4 or 5 years and with us that stop in Ottawa. But this is – sounds like a good fit to me. You know, he's – not the player he was at in his you know, heyday, but he's a good centerman. He's got a little scoring flair, so he's just like another guy that I think would be interesting.
I agree with you. I think I think when he was traded to Florida, the immediately it was like, well, look for the Panthers to flip him to somebody else. And I think we all kind of thought the Islanders would make sense. But I'm just kind of really curious, just even in general, like, what happened? Like, when he went to
so weird. It's so weird how players – that happens with players.
I know. When he went to Ottawa, you know, the Rangers traded him for Mika Zibanejad. And I remember people thinking, like, well, that's a pretty even trade. Like, at the time, Brassard probably had better, like, sort of just boxcar numbers than Zibanejad had at that point. But since that trade, I mean, obviously, it's ridiculous. I mean, Zibanejad is excellent, and Brassard was okay for Ottawa, but he wasn't, like, as good. And then he went to the Penguins, and it – I fully admit, I mean, I don't know if this is a mea culpa or whatever, but when they traded for Derek Brassard, I was pissed because I'm like, well, Ottawa just handed the Penguins a third straight Stanley Cup.
You were not alone. Are you kidding me right now? You were not alone in that. I feel like everybody was like, they were like, what the hell? Like, how, no matter what it was, like they should have waited. They should have held out for Sidney Crosby in return just because you literally are giving the Penguins the cup.
I was like, that's ridiculous. I mean, okay, maybe he's, you know, he hasn't been that good, but he's good. Why would you do that? And this is like, you know, he's better than Jordan Staal. He's better than these other guys they've had running, Nick Bonino or whoever was, you know, the third line center for those couple of years. And it just, it never materialized. And I'm just, you know, when something like that happens, I mean, it's kind of happened with Greiss a little bit last year. Like, he was so bad. You just wonder what's the deal? Like, I mean, I guess it can happen to anybody, but still, like, dude, there's got to be something. I always wonder if there's something like off the ice. I'm totally pulling this out of my behind, obviously, but like you just, it's just such a steep drop off for a guy who was good not long ago. And you just like, what is the deal? How did that happen? But yeah, maybe he turns it on again. Who knows?
Yeah. And for guys like us who aren't Penguins fans and don't pay attention to the Penguins every day, sure, you know, we have an eye on them because they're in the division. It kind of just popped up like when,
right.
And around like Christmas time, they're like, well, the Penguins are basically Derek Brassard has his bags packed. Like, what?
Yeah.
What is he? Aren't they? They're doing pretty well. Like, they're right. Okay. But
well, that's I mean, the trade kind of came out of nowhere, especially for Nick Bjugstad, who nobody had expected, you know, was going to get traded. I mean, he'd been in Florida forever. He was a very popular guy in the locker room with fans and everything. And all of a sudden, he's a Penguin. And the same with the Brian Boyle thing. Like, Bob McKenzie, classic Bob McKenzie, swoops in the middle of the day and is like, Nashville and New Jersey are talking about Brian Boyle, expected to go down soon. And then, like, within an hour, yeah, he's gone. Second-round pick. There you go. Boom. It was like, wow, that really just happened? So, you know, tis the season. It's upon us, and you never know. Guys are moving around, and you know, again, I'm not necessarily, I think Boyle would have been an okay fit. I'm not necessarily sad he's gone. I'm definitely not sad that the Islanders didn't spend a second round pick on him because they only have a first and a second and not a third and a fourth. So again, Lou's gonna have to get creative. Maybe he's trade some 2020 picks. We'll see what happens. But yeah, so keep your eyes and ears open, and you never know who's gonna be moving here and there. We'll see what happens. In other league news, Austin Matthews signed a contract extension. I don't care. I really don't. I just find it funny that.
Oh, I didn't care until today. I didn't care until today when I saw what Mitch Marner's agent said. Made me so happy. Like, good for this guy. I hope he's an Islander fan.
He's check his pajamas, check his bedroom. He was just saying, I don't know, that, you know, it was just weird. Like, Mike Babcock's like, oh, Mitch is going to be a Leaf for a long time. And then the agent was saying, like, well, you know, we're not going to give him a hometown discount and yada yada. And then immediately had to go back and like walk it all back over the course of all day on every radio station. I really don't care. I just find it funny that The Athletic doesn't really do breaking news unless it's about the Leafs. And then there's immediately like five stories about this one topic within an hour of it happening. And that's all we get to hear about now. Like, how does this affect, how does Matthews' contract affect Mitch Marner? How does it affect other RFAs? How does it affect the price of tea in China? How does it affect the rotation of the earth? I don't care. The guy got paid. He's good. He got paid. Let the Leafs figure it out later on. Oh, it's a bad contract for the Leafs. They're going to have to pay. Who cares? Who cares? Let them pay the man.
It's
whatever.
It's good news. I think it's actually great news for Austin Matthews or whatever, but I think it's just, it's a good news for the Allied powers. You know, I think everyone else is kind of like circling around being like, all right, as Mitch Marner's agent eloquently put, this is not a team friendly deal.
Yeah,
and don't expect Mitch to take a hometown discount.
So there you go.
Could we keep this interview going, please? Like, I would tell us more. Tell us more. What about this guy's next contract?
The only words I want to hear when it comes to Austin Matthews and contract is when he signs with the Arizona Coyotes. That's what I want to know. Got about 5 years. The clock has begun. And in about 5 years, he's probably going to sign with the Coyotes. That's the only contract of Austin Matthews I want to hear about.
Yeah, it's great. But
that'll be fun.
It's funny how you do say that, and you're not even kidding about the Athletic. It's just it's crazy if you're scrolling through a feed.
I really do. I mean, I get that the Leafs guys are doing it, but then when the non-Leafs guys are doing it, it's like, No, I don't. We don't mean. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I, as a person, like as a creative person, I kind of pride myself on trying to come up with something that's a little bit different and trying to do something that's a little bit different. Maybe it's not for everybody. I mean, you and I, we're here. This is just us hanging out. Like, there's really nothing, you know, not a lot of podcasts are like this. It's just us hanging out. So it's our thing. It's different. I don't know if I could write the same story that four other guys are writing. Like, yeah, it would just drive me nuts.
Yeah, I can't. I can't. I mean, I just wonder, you know, where I work, like we, that when we talk about editorial meetings, like we will immediately stop ourselves, almost be like, wait, someone else just right. did that, or we already did it. Can right. I, like, if I'm sure these guys aren't all together in an office, but you know, James Myrtle and Pierre LeBrun and Craig Custance and Sean McAdoo. Yeah. Yeah. Like they're all like, all right, you take the, what does this mean for Mitch Marner? You take the, what does this mean for the next big star?
Right.
Someone used the word precedent in their title and we'll be good.
Oh, no, who's got the lockout one? We need a lockout one. Somebody did
lock, you know, so yeah. Oh, it's, you know, and it's funny because we talk a lot about how the Islanders for most of the past 20 years have had one, if that, beat writer, and you know, whether it's Greg Logan or Arthur Staple, whoever it's been, we probably took that for granted because it's a lot better yeah. than the alternative having 35 of them.
Yeah, no, I've thought that before, not just when it comes to the Leafs, but the Oilers too, in particular. Those two, I mean, other teams too, but like in particular, those two teams a long time ago have made me appreciate just having like the one guy. Sometimes you wish it was a second voice or another guy, right. you know, with an idea, but you know, I would much rather have one Arthur Staple or an Arthur Staple and an Andrew Gross than 57 guys all writing the same thing. Or I mean, the funny thing was when they signed this contract, I thought to myself, well, what are these radio stations going to talk about now? Because the only thing they've been talking about this whole time is what Matthews is going to sign for. Then it occurred to me, well, duh, they're obviously going to talk about Marner's contract. So yeah. it's a constant thing. And then there'll be somebody else. And that's enough.
It's funny. So the Islanders have had so much weird stuff happen to them in the past, you know, 10, 12 years, whatever. So you wonder, like, what if the Islanders really did matter to the local sports market? Just, I actually did want to bring this up. So I guess this could segue is when, what's her name? Laura Curran or the NASA,
right, yeah.
NASA executive who wrote yeah. a letter to Carey Bettman.
Yeah.
And it's just like the irony is just too much. But just imagine what that media circus would do with that. You know, and those kind of like zany things that happen around the Islanders once a week. Something weird yeah. happens with the Islanders once a week and nobody really knows outside of Islander fans or knows how to grasp it and get to the like to truly digest it and know what it means besides us, because nobody really covers it outside of, you know, the dedicated Islanders beat writers and the people in the Islanders quasi beat that's meshed with the political town of Hempstead beat. Jim Baumbach is not a political writer and he's not an Islanders writer. He's both. And so it's really weird. So like, yeah. you just wonder like, what would these media circus, like what would that, how would they handle those kind of things? And you're like, all right, thank God it's just these guys. And
when that tweet went out, I mean, Gross tweeted it, and I mean, but the usuals, you know, retweeted it or whatever. I actually thought to myself what you just said, like how many people are reading, you know, people follow these guys for hockey news, and how many people from like, you know, Toronto or Ottawa or not even, you know, Raleigh or Dallas or Nashville or whatever is like, what the hell am I even looking at right now? Like, you know, and meanwhile, to an Islanders fan, they see that Nassau County logo at the top and you're just like, oh shit, something just happened. You know, and it turned out to be innocuous. Like, it's nice. I mean, she can say what she wants. It's fine. It certainly beats, you know, telling them, you know, get lost or, you know, we're not going to, you know, you're not going to play here anymore. But I don't know how much it means. I don't know if Gary Bettman really even cares all that much. I don't know if it's going to change anything, but like, you know, we see that county seal and we immediately know something bad has gone on, or, you know, I mean, so, but to anybody else, this is complete nonsense. This is like, you know, players in the ECHL, not even, you know, making noise. They're not gonna, I don't know who plays for the Sharks ECHL team. I don't even know if they have an ECHL team. I don't care, you know, but this kind of thing. So yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know. I think we all agree that we would all prefer games at the Coliseum in the playoffs. But my whole thing is, can they make the playoffs first? Like, am I crazy for just being like, please just qualify for the playoffs first, then we'll worry about it. I really don't want to even want to talk about this right now. I'd rather they just qualify. Sports Club Stats had them at 98.4% or something. The Athletic had them at like 87.something%. So none of that's good enough. I want an X. You know, Mike Carver was saying on the last podcast, I want an X next to their name in the standings before I will even entertain the idea of where the hockey games are going to be played.
I can't wait for that. It's kind of like the trade deadline with Lou and stuff. This is such a weird situation. Nobody knows. Maybe one person or two people in the world know where the Islanders, if they by some miracle make the playoffs. I don't want to jinx them. So if they do make the playoffs, where they're going to play it, it's basically just Gary Bettman and maybe the two owners that know or have an inkling. And so I also want to get Ben out of shape about it because the fact that we're having this, it's like almost like the Islanders ruined it for they're like, oh, well, we could split these games because, you know, it'll be nice. The fans, they're not going to be good. People still show up to the games because they're not going to be good. And they love the Coliseum again all of a sudden. And you know, there's no way in hell they're making the playoffs. So we won't have to worry about that. And then they do. And the whole brass is probably like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah. I would think that they would consult the players at least, but I think they would probably say they'd rather play the Coliseum too, but, we shall see. I will actually be at Barclays Center on Sunday watching the game against the Wild, going with my friend and his two sons. I've been telling them they live in the city and I've been like, you know, there's the kind of feeling that this might be the last games they ever play in Brooklyn before going back to the Coliseum. So if your kids want to go to a game, you probably should go right now. He is a federal employee, so he was shut down for a few weeks there. And when they came back, I was like, hey, you still want to go? And he was like, yeah, now we can go. Now I have some extra cash. So I was like, okay, let's go. And so if they lose, you could blame me because I will be in attendance. And that's all they've pretty much done this whole time. But I have yet to attend a Barry Trotz Islanders game, so we'll see what happens. But,
it's an experience.
I can imagine.
Get ready to see people be where they're supposed to be.
I don't know if I can handle it. Well, it will be in Brooklyn, so won't be the full experience, but it'll be close enough. And then the day before that, again, they have the game against the Avalanche. If you go, it's Marvel Superheroes Day. Say hello to Black Panther for me, Spider-Man. They're all going to be there. That's pretty awesome. Get yourself a Captain America bobblehead. That's pretty cool. Apparently, the Sunday game is Chewbacca Can Koozie Day. So that's pretty cool, I guess. I'm going to get a Chewbacca Can Koozie for my my Star Wars drinks. I don't know. That's pretty cool. Yeah, I hope they don't give them out. I was telling my wife, I'm like, they're probably going to give those out after the game. She's like, why? I'm like, you don't want to give anybody anything you can throw before you go to a hockey game. She's like, why? You think they'll throw it? I'm like, dude, you have no, you have no idea what these people are capable of. So we'll see. I don't even know if I'm going to get one. We'll see what happens.
So wait, so they play the Wild Saturday, Avalanche Saturday, Wild Sunday at the Barclays. And then there's one more game at Barclays? Or is it?
Yes. Yeah, next Saturday against the Oilers is the final one.
Do you think they'll do like some farewell stuff like they did to the Coliseum that time that they say goodbye to the Coliseum?
Maybe they'll go really wild and totally crazy and actually open up more than one concession stand in the entire place. Like you can like, yes, we're going to give you for one last time. We're going to actually offer you this awesome food that they have here before you go away forever.
Oh, man. That is going to be funny that last game there. Oh, it's, you know what? It's because the tennis is coming to the Coliseum.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Oh,
all right. If you have nothing to do the next, I think it's the 9th to the 17th. You should go. It's fun. It's fun to watch professional tennis, and there's nobody there, so you can just like sit like wherever you want. And a couple good players are going, and it's definitely a good experience. It's just the men's side, I believe. I think it's a 250 level tournament, so there'll be some decent players. You don't expect like stars, but it'll be fun. Yeah. I'll definitely be going a couple times.
I wonder if that'll do more attendance than the Long Island Nets have done. Yeah. I haven't heard much of them lately.
Very close. I went last year and I did also, I was working nights so I could go during the day. So obviously, you know, weekday in February, I don't really know anybody who would be allowed to or would want to go to the Nassau Coliseum to watch tennis. except for me. And so I went, and there was like 30 people there.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. So, well, you know, you can only see so many movies, right?
Like before
or after you've seen Lego Movie 2, you can check out the Tennis at the Coliseum. That's a cool segue to some other plugs to get to. So March 16th, once again, Offside Tavern, live Isles Buzz podcast. Nick Hershon, author of We Want Fish Sticks, is going to be there along with Noel and Dan. So go there, watch the Islanders Red Wings game in the afternoon. Stick around. Live Isles Buzz podcast. I'm sure it'll be awesome. Offside Tavern, March 16th. You should go there. SneakyAthletic.com. Again, they got all that cool GOAT and all that cool Fort Never Lose stuff. You should go check it out there. And you can save 10% by putting anxiety in the discount code box. They have a lot of cool. I mean, you should check it. I mean, it's a great site. They got a lot of cool stuff there. You save yourself 10%. It's a nice little chunk that comes off when you just type in anxiety in the discount code box. So you should do that. SneakyAthletic.com. Our NHLNames.com. NHL Name of the Week. This week is...
Pattern on the loose puck for Minnesota.
Greg Pattern of the Minnesota Wild. Was a longtime Montreal Canadian. He was then a Dallas Star for a little while. Somehow he ended up in Minnesota. I thought it was
Pattern,
but yeah.
We should send these guys something.
Yeah, right.
I got no idea how you end up. I know, and I'm pretty sure he's like a very nice man. It's I see like tweets and pictures of him like with people who need help or whatever. So, cool. Well, congratulations, Greg.
Yeah, I remember when he was a Canadian for a long time because he was like I think a fairly high draft pick, not a first round pick, but like a second or maybe third. I don't know what he was, but
yeah, he's got a decent beard.
Yeah, and but he was like the Canadiens fans were just rough on him, man. They never gave him a break, and you know he eventually got run out of town for. Oh, he got traded for Jordy Benn, who was just equally as bad, apparently.
And yeah, equally
as bearded.
Yeah, I think Jordy's got a nice beard too.
Yeah, yeah, no, Jordy has he's still got the beard. I think Pattern may have shaved his, but anyway, it's an interesting player. And NHLNames.com, check it out. You can hear Greg Pattern and other name pronunciations. Courtesy of Travis and John. So there you go. Check that out. Okay. As last but not least, tell everybody your Twitter account again.
It's the Big Lebowski with two E's.
You should follow Mike at the Big Lebowski. You should follow Mike's friend Andy at Bet Andy Bet. He is he's coming around to the Islanders. Hey, you know, it took a while, but can't fault the guy for that. And get some tips there. And I don't know, maybe make you some money for yourself. Use this to your advantage. I don't think anybody would have put money on these guys early in the season, but you probably still can. And hey, maybe you win something. You never know.
Yeah, there you go. I think he's very willing to help if you go about it the right way, if you have good questions. And I'd if it's something you're interested in learning about, I'd definitely encourage you to start with him.
Be nice.
Yes,
if you're going to ask him some questions, be nice. Thanks for hanging out with us. We had a great time. We're going to meet next week after the game against the Sabres. And hopefully the Islanders have righted the ship. And we'll see how some new line pairings can spark some more offense. And if they can get back to their stifling defense, that'd be pretty cool. Thanks again. And we will talk to you next week. All right. Bye-bye. Mile down deep in-